The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Trends are emerging in GP practices and in hospitals all around the country as many medical professionals are reporting an upsurge yet again in COVID-19 infections. The resurgence is putting additional pressure on an already busy health service. And elsewhere, health unions, including the Irish Nurses and Midwives Organisation, are calling for the abandonment of plans which would cut the COVID special leave pay scheme, which could see frontline workers not being covered while they battle long COVID symptoms. Now, for more on all of this, I will be talking to Tony Fitzpatrick, Director of Industrial Relations at the INMO, in a moment or two. But first, Dr. Brendan O'Shea, Kildare GP and Assistant General Practice Professor in Trinity College in Dublin. Good morning and welcome to you both. First of all, Brendan, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Now, tell me what you are seeing in your practice in terms of a surge in COVID.
Well, this happens every late spring and early summer. There's a huge increase in viral infections in the community, and that's what we're seeing. It was very evident as far back as 6 or 8 weeks ago with an increase in coughs, colds, runny noses and gastroenteritis. And in the last 2 to 3 weeks, we're definitely seeing a very significant increase in people becoming quite sick with COVID-19. This happens this time every year, and it'll happen again heading in the autumn winter time as well.
Now, you're saying that we should just group COVID in with all of those other typical late spring, early summer viruses.
I think we need to understand this happens at least twice every year. And I think clearly COVID has some similarities. It's very transmissible. It's very infectious. The first line management is the same. It's fluids, it's paracetamol, it's isolating. So there are good reasons to group it in there, but also to be particularly aware of it. And what we're interested in is people are presenting to our services. Like all GPs, I've done sessions on my local cooperative in the out-of-hours setting, and we're seeing people presenting. Many of them are being brilliant and they're being really smart and intelligent about it. And there are many others who are not. There are still people who are wandering around the place with a cough, cold, runny nose for 3 or 4 days and they haven't done a rapid antigen test. There are people who are not isolating. There are people who are not doing the best that they could do with masks, for example. And there are people also who are fairly heedless and not very careful about the vulnerable people in their household or in their workplace. So that's where the interest really lies, that we can do better with this.
Yeah. Now we've had reports of people who've had some of those symptoms. You talk about runny noses and coughs and a bit chesty and so on, and they're not testing positive with antigen. And then 3 or 4 days later, they say, uh-oh, I'm now positive. Maybe people don't really understand that it takes a little time for the body to generate those antigens which are detected by the test.
Well, that is correct. And also the rapid antigen test is not a perfect test. So a practical approach is to do 2 tests on 2 consecutive days. And if both of them are negative, then the probability of it being COVID is quite small. But let's go back to the bigger envelope. Whether it is or it isn't COVID, you're not doing anybody favours by spreading this around. Another thing the smart crowd are very good at is they're absolutely organised about their immunisations and they're very clear. And they're following the HSE guidance on that. Lots of us in practice are still giving significant volumes of immunisation, so also our colleagues in pharmacies. All of this makes us more resilient as a society. And there's a lot to play for. I don't think we need more legislation to tell us what to do. This is our 3rd year heading into it. Let's just be good at it. It just makes life easier. We're also seeing a huge amount of disruption to people's personal lives. People who are stressed over travel arrangements that have gone up in flames. So let's just get on with it.
Now, the question of second infections, I've had a text from a pal of mine, second time in a few weeks, getting COVID.
Well, why are we surprised about this? This is just the way it is. And we understand the pathology of this. We understand the microbiology of it. We understand that this is a mutating virus. So we're desperately looking for a one-size-fits-all or the perfect solution. This is a complex process, and there are several parts to the solution. And probably the most important part in an Irish context is how individual people, how households actually respond to this. Internationally, we give ourselves a very hard time. We beat ourselves up. But in actual fact, we are amazingly fortunate, given the extent to which we can avail of immunization, for example, which is simply not the case in three quarters of the planet, where there is serious difficulty with immunization. So get on and do these things.
Yeah. Now, Brendan, one of the stats we got from the HSE was about half the people who were hospitalized with COVID were not vaccinated at all.
Well, I won't just repeat myself again.
You know what I mean?
So Tony is coming on in relation to our nursing colleagues. I'm here in relation to, well, our my GP colleagues and GP nurses and patients attending practice. We really need to mind each other. And if we are not doing these things, the unvaccinated crowd are taking up capacity in the acute hospital system. So in my list today, I will have people waiting for cancer care, for surgical procedures for bowel cancer, whose procedures are inevitably going to be disrupted and interfered with as a result of these people who are choosing not to be immunized. Now, we can respect everybody's point of view, but the science of this is now very black and white. And it would be really fantastic if we could just row in behind it and smarten up everybody, not just a smart crowd.
Now, when you get someone coming in who's never been vaccinated, even though we're this far into the pandemic, I'm sure you're encouraging them and say, well done, you're doing the right thing. But what do, without naming names or talking about personalities, what do they say about, you know, their reluctance so far into this to get vaccinated, and suddenly they've had a Pauline conversion on the road to Lucan and they decide, I'll get it done?
Well, they're just welcomed in and they're congratulated. And, you know, maybe I'm being casual about it. Everybody should get immunized. Well, today, at this point, in June 2022, everybody should really be immunized unless there's a serious, hard medical contraindication. Our society is complex, but it's not a good choice to express yourself politically by deciding not to get immunized. And there are a proportion of people who might see immunization as part of the establishment, and this is not a good way to object to whatever you're liking to. This is bread and butter. This is the water we drink. It's the air we breathe. It's our household. It's our community. It's our school. It's our workplace. We're amazingly fortunate. Use the facilities. And can we really try and protect the acute hospital system? Have a thought for healthcare professionals. We've been checking, as we do frequently, please can you wear a mask if you're coming into a healthcare facility? In my clinic today, 9 out of 10 people will wear a mask, 1 out of 10 people won't, and we'll be very polite and insistent and we'll give them a mask. But if we can just be, it's just so common sense.
Now, the question of people who are currently allowed to get the second booster, those over 65, those with some immunocompromising conditions. But NIAC are supposed to be looking at broadening the cohort of people who might get this. And we hear anecdotally of pharmacists who've got stock saying, I'd love to give it to somebody. I do not want to have to dispose of this when its best by date arrives. So how much booster is out there available to people if only NIAC would broaden the sweep?
Well, there's about three questions in that. And I think the most important thing is that our society is well supplied with vaccines and to everything else as well. And vaccines are arguably one of the most cost-effective healthcare interventions for what they deal with. So I don't think we should unduly catastrophize about shortage of vaccines. Do you want to go to anywhere in Africa? Do you want to go to anywhere?
No, it's just if we have stuff that has to be thrown out because there aren't enough people queuing up to get their boosters, and there are people who'd love to get a booster.
I don't have a hard answer for you on that one. But for individuals out there who are not immunized, we really hope that you change your mind in that regard. For those who've fallen behind in their immunization schedule, can you go directly onto the HSE website and follow the guidance on that? And I'm afraid the guidance on that changes from time to time because the science and the vaccine supply are changing variables as well. Did I say something earlier on about us looking for a quick, easy fix for this? There isn't one. It's a little bit complicated. But clearly, we can understand this morning that there is a significant significant percentage of the population who are brilliant. They're doing everything correctly and they are really making a difference. And there's another percentage who are mixed and there's another percentage who are hard objectors. But I would hope that those percentages will adjust and that more of us will do what we know is effective.
This one has come in from a listener just now. Can you ask your doctor? I have kids living together. One is positive, one is negative. Both tested a number of times. The negative one is much sicker with the sore throat, cold and slight fever. It seems strange. And that can happen.
That can happen. Again, we're desperately looking for simple explanations as to what's going on. Any illness is an interaction between what causes the illness and the individual. But this is a really good query from that caller, because these are the parents that we're talking to who are terribly worried and concerned. But the correct things to do are, the minute there's the onset of symptoms, take steps to isolate. Paracetamol every 4 to 6 hours or Nurofen. Encourage fluids. Make a note of the amount of fluids that your child is able to drink. And for the majority of these illnesses, if your child is responding reasonably and is a little bit more comfortable with antipyretic medication, if they're taking a reasonable amount of fluids, if they're taking at least half the usual amount of fluids over 24 hours that they usually do, and if they feel reasonably well, then manage it on a day-to-day basis and do your two rapid antigens.
Yeah, but your message is there are a lot of other viruses out there, and one child could have all of those, which are not being tested for, and the other child has COVID, which is being tested for.
Well, there's a good case for testing for COVID, because the rate of serious complication with COVID is a little bit higher than it is for a regular rhinovirus, for example, or a Coxsackie virus or any of the other viruses that are circulating. So there is a case for testing for COVID-19, and particularly in relation to primarily in relation to the child, but in relation to anybody anybody vulnerable that they might spread the infection to. And then there's that other layer of social inconvenience that if we don't do these things, we've got to go back to coughs and sneezes spread diseases. If we don't do these things, and if these all sorts of infections, if there's an increase in spread, there's just a huge amount of disruption then to schools, workplaces, travel plans and healthcare services.
And finally, and briefly, because I'm going to talk to Tony Fitzpatrick about long COVID in a moment, are you seeing much long COVID in your surgery?
We're seeing everything in our surgery, and at the level of a single surgery, it's difficult to be scientific. Are we seeing much of it? We're certainly seeing, and again, most days I'll have a consultation with somebody who certainly has symptoms that are consistent with long COVID. This continues to be a difficult time for people. We're seeing significant amounts of anxiety and depression. We're seeing significant amounts of problem drinking. And we're seeing cancers and we're seeing heart disease as well. It's general practice, we see everything. But certainly the issue of long COVID is an evolving one. The science around it is still assembling, and certainly it's an issue for people attending our practice and indeed any other practice, I believe.
Dr. Brendan O'Shea, Kildare GP, Assistant General Practice Professor at Trinity College in Dublin. Thank you very much. Listening to that, Tony Fitzpatrick, Director of Industrial Relations at the INMO. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, your members are on the front line, and I'm sure they're wary going into work every day. So many people going into hospital, sometimes with other conditions, but being tested positive for COVID and, of course, exposing them to the virus.
Absolutely. And you know, there are 776 patients in hospital with COVID-19. That's a 333% increase since the beginning of June. It is an extremely worrying time for all healthcare professionals and staff, because we're seeing growing numbers of transmission within the community. That is reflective, obviously, in the healthcare settings. And, you know, we have to recognize that, you know, there is a biologicals agents directive from November 2020, and that's setting out minimum standards for the health and safety of workers who are exposed to a biological agent. And it's important to recognise that COVID-19 is a biological agent, and it does affect people within the health workforce.
Now we know that boosters, which are not available, the second booster is not available to nurses on the front line as yet. That may change. But the question is, the INMO has kind of resisted the answer to this question. Why isn't every nurse vaccinated? And they aren't. And we know that. And you try to encourage them. But it seems unconscionable that they would put themselves in harm's way without a vaccination.
Well, the vast majority, and look, we've engaged the INMO and all of the health sector trade unions are pro-vaccination. We've encouraged all of our members to get vaccination. Vaccinations are available. The indications from the HSE is that very high percentages of healthcare workers have been vaccinated, as in well in excess of 90% at one particular point in time. So we don't mandatory vaccination. We've seen the data from all over the world. It generally doesn't work. It's better that we educate.
I don't advocate mandatory vaccination for the entire population. That would be crazy. But for people working in hospital treating patients, I would think that's almost required.
Well, look, we've had in even with Colin Henry, the chief clinical officer of the HSE, the discussions we had with the HSE, and this is all of the health sector unions, is that all of us would work together to positively encourage people, to educate people. And the result of that is that the vast majority of healthcare workers are vaccinated. Yeah. And I agree with you, Pat. If you're going into a workplace, you know, you have to mitigate the risks. It's very important that the employer mitigates the risk, but also the employee as well. Yeah. And that's why we've written to Colin Henry actually today in regards to infection prevention and control, revised guidelines that are needed now. Also, we've sought an update with regards to the booster vaccination and its availability for healthcare workers. And one of the key things we've outlined is that the EU Advisory Committee on Safety and Health at Work has recommended that COVID-19 is recognised as an occupational disease in particular sectors. And it's vitally important now that the HSE put in place a scheme in regards to occupational disease for healthcare workers.
What's the issue about the long COVID scheme, the pay scheme being eliminated or scrapped? Because we're clearly in the middle of a surge. I mean, surely normal rules apply that if you're sick, you're on sick leave and you do get paid.
Well, the issue here is that at the beginning of the pandemic, a special leave with pay was agreed. So that basically meant that healthcare workers who got COVID-19 in the workplace were put on special leave with pay. Now, for the majority of people after the isolation period, they returned to work as normal and there was no major issue with regards to that. But we are seeing, and it varies, from 10 to 20% can have long COVID. And there are a small number of healthcare workers, less than 200 according to the HSE figures, that remain on special leave with pay. But the government are ceasing special leave with pay from tomorrow.
But surely if you've got your doctor's cert and they say you're sick and you just get sick pay because the staff nurses are entitled to the same as anybody else?
No, I referenced the biological agents and the EU Advisory Committee. It is different for healthcare workers because they are going into a workplace where there is a biological agent that makes them sick. And for some of them, it makes them some of them have ended up in ICU. And some of them have had very debilitating illnesses. Some of them are struggling to get back to daily activities.
But if a doctor certifies them as sick, if a doctor certifies them as sick, there should be no issue. At all. I mean, obviously this scheme was put in place so they didn't need doctor's certs every 3 weeks to prove they were still sick. But I mean, with a cert, you get paid.
The other thing it did, Pat, though, was protect their pay throughout that period. And it wasn't discounting off their sick leave entitlement. And the issue here is that the Minister for Health, 8 weeks ago at our conference, stated to a room full of nurses and midwives that he would ensure that on the 1st of July, there would be no cliff face for healthcare workers who find themselves in the unfortunate position that they're still suffering from long COVID and are unable to return to work. Some of those people have had sick leave already. Their sick leave will be exhausted and from tomorrow will be on no pay. And these are the same people that stepped up to the mark when the state needed them. They went into a dangerous work environment, they delivered for patients, they ensured that the state was able to respond to COVID-19. They got sick themselves. They stood up for the state, and now the Minister for Health and the Minister for Public Expenditure Reform are sidestepping the issue and not dealing with it. Minister Donnelly said there would be no cliff face. He said his officials would. I remember when he made the announcement on the stage, I walked up from the back of the hall to his officials who travelled with him and said, I'll be writing to you seeking engagement on this issue. In the 8 weeks, despite Minister Donnelly saying there would be engagement, they have failed to, we've never seen them or heard from them since, and now this scheme is gone from tomorrow, which is completely unacceptable. And it also affects all healthcare workers. So those healthcare workers putting themselves at risk now won't have the safety net of special leave with pay. And frankly, that's despicable. And it's despicable that two ministers have simply walked away from this.
Tony Fitzpatrick, Director of Industrial Relations at the INMO, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.